Hey, everybody, this is Barca Talk. I'm Brian. With me, as usual, is Gabriel Quiroga.
Hello, Brian, my Barca brother from a different mother and fellow Culés. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, and we're starting today. We just finished watching the Las Palmas match, and there's all kinds of political stuff going on around that. So we're gonna kick the show off with that. We're gonna circle back around to the Champions League match earlier in the week and some other news surrounding the club in a bit. But the top story for today is easily having to do with the referendum effort in Catalonia and the action taken by the central government of Spain, sending more and more civil guard police into the region, confiscating ballot boxes. Plenty of photos have been showing up on social media showing, you know, of course, the heart-stringing ones are like old ladies with blood on their heads having been beaten by police. But then there is also a good number of perfectly normal photos of people voting happily, peacefully. So that was nice. But that whole situation is the biggest news coming out of the region right now. And it affected the game against Las Palmas. And so that's what we're going to get into right now. What are your initial thoughts being in Spain right now, Gabriel?
Yeah, so today I went to a brunch this morning, and all around Madrid right now, a lot of people have their Spanish flags in the balconies, which is a stark contrast to when I was in Barcelona, which they had the opposite. They had these flags that said C, which meant for Independencia. So here today, for example, there was a lot of marches in a lot of cities around Spain supporting the government and obviously all the things that are happening in Barcelona. I have been watching videos and news and trying to keep up to date with everything, but it's kind of confusing for me because I'm not Spanish, and I can hear both sides of the story, just like any political issue. There's no easy answer. But the other thing, too, is the way I think the Spanish government is going about this is not the best way either. But today, in today's match, obviously, we saw that they didn't allow the people to come in. And we were WhatsApping right before the game because we didn't know if the game was going to go ahead or not. And we were waiting and waiting and waiting. And finally, they decided to go ahead with the game because they couldn't afford to lose the 6 points. But yeah, so that's what's going on here. Everyone's kind of either for Spain or Catalonia right now, basically.
Yeah, like all morning, you and I were back and forth, and I was in communication with a couple of listeners, and we're going back and forth with these reports that they're going to postpone the match, or you know, it's suspended for this weekend. And then the lineups were confirmed. I hadn't seen anything officially announced yet, and you and I were in touch, and I said, well, the lineups have been confirmed, so either, you know, they're going to play or maybe they'll make a last-minute decision. And sure enough, that's what they did. They made a last-minute decision to go ahead with the match because the league would not allow them to postpone it. So they were threatening a forfeit for this match and a 3-point deduction from their overall score. Now, in the midst of a larger political situation, I mean, again, sport is maybe not the most important thing. But then again, you know, we've been seeing lately in American sports how politics is making its way into the sporting world. And I hear a lot of people criticizing that, but I don't totally understand that criticism, because the fact is our sports are such a major part of our culture, our popular culture, and what's going on around us in the moment. So why wouldn't politics get involved in sports? I mean, that's where the people are watching. That's what the people are paying attention to. They're not paying attention to the news as much as they are to the sports. So bring the news into the sports, right? So that's, I sort of got off on a tangent there. But my point is, actually, I don't know what my point is. I just sort of flew off there. But going back to what you said about how what you feel about how the Spanish government is not handling this well, I could not agree more or more strongly. I mean, sure, maybe this vote is illegal and illegitimate by under law, right? And the Constitutional Court in Spain has already deemed it so. That doesn't mean that you have to send riot police in to beat people up, hit people with clubs, and confiscate ballot boxes. You could just let them go about their vote peacefully and then deal with it in the courts again. It's a much more peaceful solution. So, I mean, honestly, this is some authoritarian bullshit that's going on right now.
Like, for example, I saw a video of the Guardia Civil, which is like the national police here, confiscating the ballots. But the way they did it with such force and such anger, you know, that's – they could have just easily just taken them away, create a blockade if they really wanted to do it peacefully, you know. But it's like the way they are coming across – it's just too much, you know? And like you said, I totally agree. They could have just let them do the vote and then have it go through the courts and then go through that. You know, there's a lot of steps that need to happen for, you know, we've talked about this before about how they need to do so many steps to become independent. This is one step, but also they haven't had a census. So I was watching different videos on Twitter and stuff, how different journalists were able to vote multiple times today. So that's another issue. So, you know, this is just like we were talking about in the US sports with the NFL and that's going on. And here it's just, it's really, really difficult to avoid politics and sport because it's just, it's involved every day. We consume it. It's going to mix.
Yeah. And honestly, right now I feel like, sports is more involved in politics than art is, and that's historically not been so much the case. You know, a lot of times art has been a place where dialogue and discourse about politics and cultural issues comes up a lot. And it's not that that isn't happening, but the fact is not as many people are paying attention to it as they are to sports. So I'm glad to see these kinds of developments happening around in the sport world.
Well, you know, like in the olden times, right? Like art was considered, you know, that's the popular culture. And now sports is so important to us. That's, you know, when we look back in history, these are the type of things that we're going to be looking at with, like, for example, Colin Kaepernick doing the with the national anthem, what he's doing. You know, these are the type of moments that we're going to look back and say, okay, you know, maybe before, maybe 200 years ago, the art world was taking, you know, they were making a stance against authoritarian governments. And now it's sports.
Yeah, absolutely. And there just wasn't as big of a sports world 100 years ago as there is now. Now it's at the center of everything. But let's shift gears just a little bit and talk about the match itself. So we already mentioned this about how there was this dispute or argument happening prior to the match that would it be postponed or not? The club apparently wanted to Barcelona wanted to suspend the match, play it, you know, reschedule it for another day. The league said, no, if you don't show up and play at the scheduled time, you're going to forfeit this match and we're going to penalize you 3 more points. So by not playing, Barcelona would have sacrificed 6 points in the table. And so the compromise, it seems to me like a compromise. And the fact is, the club issued a statement about why they were going to play behind closed doors. And it was very, it was a little vague and very succinct. And it just said, in light of the events surrounding, it just said in light of recent events. So I think in a lot of ways you can read into that whatever you want. It becomes like an ink blot. You know, you could say, oh, well, they did it behind closed doors as a show of solidarity, or you could say they did it behind closed doors purely for security reasons. And a lot of these things are probably at least a little bit true. It did make for a very weird match.
It did. And I, in a way, it was kind of cool to watch the match that way, because for me, you can hear all the communication that goes on during the match and it just felt more personal. But obviously, I would rather have different circumstance revolving this game with no crowd, right? Obviously. Yeah, it was definitely weird. You know, it's just echoes. You know, it just seemed like they were playing a scrimmage against it. I don't know. Like I told you before, I had a really difficult time finding the video to watch this while I was trying to watch it. What were the commentators saying on BN in the U.S.?
Well, they were in the U.S. BN commentators were talking a lot about how, yeah, you can hear everything that everyone is saying. You can hear the managers and the players. And like you sent me a message during the game that commented on how loud the whistle is, because yeah, without the crowd and without the sound of the crowd there, you can hear all this stuff that you don't normally hear. You can hear every kick of the ball, and it's strange. You can hear everything echoing off of all the seats and the concrete in the stadium, and it's just bizarre. And so they were talking about the political situation. They were talking about how one of the vice presidents of FC Barcelona resigned because they agreed to play the match. That was Carles Villarubi. So Vice President Carles Villarubi resigned over this decision to play the game. And so they were talking about that during the match. And part of that, I think, has to do with the fact that it wasn't a particularly exciting match. So, and they had to fill some time with talking about other things. On the other hand, they had a lot of other things to talk about.
Yeah, when I was listening to, so when I was looking for the game, I was listening to the radio the whole time, and they were always just commentating how weird it was without sound, without the crowd, and how they could really hear the communication, because obviously I was listening in Spanish radio of the FC Barcelona website, and obviously they can understand Spanish from the players, and it was just interesting to hear them dissect what was going on, especially like on free kicks. You can totally hear the goalkeeper maneuvering his team to the left, to the right, up high. Like, it was just, so yeah, it was definitely a weird game, right? Like, at the kickoff, it just looked like a scrimmage, you know, just looked like a regular friendly scrimmage. And then I think it took the players probably about 20 minutes or so to get into the game, because it just felt so weird. So yeah.
Well, I want to bring the listeners in on your initial review of the match. So this was just after the game had ended, and you sent me a message. This is Gabriel's four-word review of the Las Palmas Barcelona match. What a shit game! So let's dig into that.
Well, you know, it's funny. Like, you know, what would you rather have? Tell me this. What would you rather have? You know, it's like, a shit sandwich or a free shit sandwich, you know? It's like I don't know, because we keep winning, so that's awesome. Like, we're winning the points. Maybe stylistically it's not the most beautiful football I've ever seen, but for me, I'm okay with it because we're winning. And these are the type of matches last year where we could have lost or tied or lost points. And I know it's still a work in progress. That's the biggest thing. But at the same time, we're still winning, and like today we didn't give up a goal. And so for me, that's always, like we talked about always in the early podcast, for me that is super important, to not allow so many goals like they did last year, because in the tougher games that we're going to have to rely on the defense, you know. And so yeah, it was a shit game. But what were your thoughts? What are your first thoughts on the game?
Well before we get into that, what in your mind, what made it a shit game?
It's just boring, you know, like like, for me, like, especially like when I had my moments of watching on the video, you know, I miss seeing the tiki taka of what we used to do. We're definitely being more aggressive attacking in the front. But I think also I'm just getting super frustrated with Luis Suarez lately. Like, he's killing me with like his offsides, his tactical, not tactical, but like his first touch, for example, is just like, it's not as...
He has always bothered me with his first touch.
Yeah, and like today when I was, you know, watching, and also from the Sporting game, it's like he gets the ball and he kind of doesn't know what he's going to do, and then he kind of just falls into a goal, you know, like especially with the own goal against Sporting. And so that, it's just not fluid. You know, obviously Messi is the only one that is keeping the team together basically on attacking. He's the one that's scoring goals. He had two more today. He could have had two more as well. You know, he's the one that's keeping the team together. But again, aesthetically, it's just not the tiki-taka that we're used to. And I guess I'm just trying to get used to this more direct style. I just kind of want a good mixture of tiki-taka, but also going attacking forward. And we're still trying to find our sea legs with that.
Okay, cool. Now that makes sense to me. I totally get that, and I understand everything you're saying. I did not feel like it was a shit game, and I didn't feel like it was boring. Though, I'll have to admit, that's mostly because I was thinking about all of these other external things at the same time as watching the game. So for me, it actually felt really tense, especially watching the way they were playing in that first half. The first half especially was, I wouldn't say disappointing, but I felt tension in the squad, right? The way they were playing, they seemed like they were trying so hard to be so attacking that they wound up giving the ball up a lot. They weren't focusing on possession, and you can see that in the numbers, right? Ultimately, at the end of the game, the possession numbers wound up to be about 50-50, which even that is weird for Barcelona, especially playing against a side like Las Palmas. They're playing some beautiful football, actually. I thought they had a lot of really good runs of play, and I was pretty impressed with Las Palmas overall. But normally, when Barcelona plays a team like Las Palmas, you expect at least 65, maybe even 70 or more percent possession. And when they're not reaching those kinds of possession numbers, you got to think, okay, well, they're giving up the ball because they have the quality to hold on to it. So why aren't they holding on to it? And again, at the end of that first half, Las Palmas had 55% of the possession in that first half, which to me is just an indicator of how kind of, I don't know, distracted or trying too hard or being impatient Barcelona was. I felt like they were being really impatient. And I think you can attribute some of that to particular players. I think Vidal was really nervy in his game in the first half. And I'm glad that Valverde took him out and replaced him for the second half right off the bat. And that actually immediately cooled things down. I think Paulinho wasn't having a good game either. So I felt all this tension watching the whole thing.
Well, you know, this is the thing. Would you feel more comfortable if it was a 1-0 victory and we had 70% possession or 74% possession?
Well, no. I mean, I'm much happier with a 3-0 result, but it's just that's how I was feeling while I was watching the game.
Okay. Well, you know, this is the thing is that with the tiki-taka, we had the possession on it, but the thing we never really did was we were looking always for this perfect, glorious goal, right? And that's how we were always trying to make the highlight reel goals, these type of things. Now it just seems like lately we're going for so many opportunities because of the ratio. And now when we get that first goal, it pretty much means downhill from there because we keep attacking, we keep attacking. So for me, I kind of like, you know, in the second half, I mean, how many shots did Suarez have? How many shots did Messi have? We were always dangerous and willing to score, you know? So for me, I like that because in the big games, we're not going to be able to always tiki-taka and have 80% possession. The other thing I really love lately is the aggressiveness we have in set plays, especially corner kicks. Now all of a sudden we are an aerial threat. Busquets scored a goal, the first goal off a corner kick. Man, Messi's pass on that was dangerous. Like I said, I told you when I used to play, I used to hate defending corner kicks. That's why when I played forward, I was like, okay, you guys got that in the back. I'll be up in the front ready for the counter because I just hated the scrum of it, you know, and I always hated knocking someone else's head. You know, when you knock heads, that feeling, you know, not the concussion feeling, but just the, you know, that bone on bone type of thing, you know, and I always was scared of that. So I really am impressed with how Valverde has implemented a.
We'll get to that in a minute.
has implemented a more aggressive set play style, and so that'll hopefully add to be more dangerous in bigger games as well.
Yeah, no, they're fantastic on those set plays now, much more threatening than they were over the last several years, which is a nice thing to see because, you know, you want to maximize your threats. You want to be able to attack in a number of different ways. And the more different ways that you can be a threat to your opponent, then, you know, the greater edge you're going to have over them. I just, when I look at that possession number, well, not just the possession number, right? It's not just a statistic, but what that statistic represents and sort of watching the game and how that statistic came about, they were really just trying so hard. I think that they thought they could just play straight through Las Palmas, that they could just bulldoze them. And it turned out that they couldn't. And then when they saw that, they didn't change anything, at least not in the first half. Valverde made a change to bring in Iniesta, bring in Rakitic, and try and change the tempo and the style of the game a little bit. And notice that that's when they scored the three goals, is when they were taking more control of the game. Because it's not just about possession for possession's sake, I don't think. I mean, I think maybe some managers or some weeks the squad is doing the possession thing and they're not really thinking about what they want to do with it. But like today, it was very mindful. He said, look, we want to dominate the game. We want to control the game. And in order to control the game, we have to control the ball. And in the first half, they just weren't doing it. And again, I think that Vidal was especially to blame for that.
I mean, he lost the
at fault.
Yeah, he was my man of the match last episode, you know, in one of the games. He played really well. He was a winger doing all the things that we want him to do as a winger. But today was the total opposite. He lost the ball a bunch of times. He looked weak on the ball. He looked like he was lacking confidence. So these are the type of things. But again, I cannot stress this enough about Valgrin and his adaptation to the games, each individual games, and how he's doing that. Because like I said, those are the type of things, those little adjustments, those little tactical things in April and in March in the Champions League when we're in the last, hopefully the last eight, those are going to be the differences that's going to allow us to move on to different rounds. And so I've been really, really impressed with Valgrin's adjustments at halftime, especially like today. Like he's like, okay, well, no, this is not happening. Iniesta, you're going back in. And of course, we get the victory. And Iniesta only played half the game too. So it's a win-win, right? So we get to save Iniesta's legs as well. So Valgrin so far, man, you are on fire.
Yeah, absolutely. We love him. We're very happy with everything he's done. And yeah, all these little adjustments. I mean, even just looking at the initial lineup, you know, there's a certain pattern that I've noticed that if Vidal starts, then Sergi Roberto is going to also start. And the two of them are going to have a very particular kind of partnership on the right side. Sergi sometimes going forward and Vidal sometimes going forward, but they're often there for each other. Sergi can play anywhere. He's so versatile. And we saw that on Tuesday against Sporting. But on Sunday against Las Palmas, you know, if Vidal plays, then Sergi's going to play. If Sergi plays, Vidal will probably be on the bench or not. We don't know. But I'm just saying, like, there's this interesting pattern with the lineups. Once they make those initial lineups, they announce the lineups and the TV networks and everything, they put them into a formation. And with Barcelona, they always put them into a 4-3-3, just about. So they find a way to make this a 4-3-3. But I was looking at that lineup, and it really felt more like a 4-4-2 kind of situation, right? You know that Sergio Roberto is going to be on right back, and Vidal is going to be maybe playing right wing-ish, but he doesn't go forward that often. He's more starting off in more of a midfield kind of situation. And so you had Denis on the left, Vidal on the right, and then Paulinho and Busquets in the middle, which is also kind of strange. So then it becomes almost like a 4-1-3-2. I mean, of course, with Barcelona, there's just so much role changing and rotation that you can't even assign one formation code to the whole game, right? But as far as their initial setup, I felt like it was more of a 4-4-2. Vidal not so much playing winger in this match as much as he was playing more like a right midfielder.
Okay, so I have a Sophie's Choice for you. You know Sophie's, you know Sophie's Choice, the movie, right?
It's impossible. I can't do it.
Yes, yes. So I have a Sophie's Choice for you. Sergio Roberto or your new microphone?
Ooh, okay. So I have to admit, my girlfriend called me out on this just the other day. I have a total man crush on Sergi Roberto. He's, I think, and I'm going to get into this also, he was my man of the match in the Sporting
game. Of course
game.
He was.
I just
of course he was.
Love him. I love him so much. But no, I think I'd have to go with the microphone. This is the RE320 by Electro Voice. I will have you know.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I was, you know, I was talking with your girlfriend the other day, and we both were worried about your man crush on Sergio Roberto. You know, you're getting lost in his eyes and in his play on the field.
Have you looked at his eyes?
So, yeah, I mean, I love me a little Sergio Roberto as well. I just love his versatility. And Barcelona has asked so much of him in the last 4 years. And again, he's come up with the goods. And I really like his trajectory in the Barca team of what he's doing. He's playing with a lot of confidence. When he plays, when he gets the time, he plays well. And he's just doing what Valgrin asked him to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And he just seems like so much more of a team player lately. Even when he's put into right back, he doesn't seem so, I don't know, discouraged as he was last year and the year before playing right back. I don't know. I think that he has a better sense of purpose, and I have to attribute that to the manager giving him encouragement and probably, you know, working him up well.
And do you also think that it could also be that Val Green actually talks to the team and lets them know his plan and strategy as opposed to Luis Enrique, who would just not do that? So I think that has a big, you know, you go up to Sergio Roberto and you say, hey, Bob, Serge Bob, I'm going to play you, you know, you're going to play 20 of the 30 matches. You're either going to play right back and sometimes you're going to play winger. You know, that's my plan for you. As long as he's honest with the player will respect and be willing to do everything he can. So,
yeah, absolutely. And it does really seem like Valverde just has a way of bringing everyone together, bringing everyone on the squad together and getting behind him. And they seem to really believe in him. And I think just like you're pointing out, the way he communicates with them, he gets everyone on board and backing him up. And they know that he's backing them up and he's sort of pulling for them, which is great.
So let's get into our man of the match. Who is your man of the match, Ryan?
You know, honestly, that's a really tough call. You know, I don't think anyone particularly stood out. Now, of course, that is with the caveat that we don't allow ourselves to call Messi the man of the match because he has now been he has ascended into Barca Talk heaven as man of the match for all time. But so given that, it's hard to make a choice. I'll say this. The 70-minute goal from Messi, how about that assist from Dennis? That was pretty sick. It was a great pass, perfect waiting, perfect timing. He caught Messi just before he would have been in an offside position, and then Messi put it home. So I think Dennis did not have an incredible game, but I think that he is continuing to develop, and he was looking pretty good in this game. You know, if you talk about the faults that were happening in the first half with Barcelona, I think you could maybe say that Dennis made a few mistakes, and yet he was the one who stayed on the pitch while Paulinho and Vidal came out. You know, and I think that that could have gone maybe another way, potentially. So I think that I'm going to pick Dennis as my man of the match, but it's like a soft man of the match.
All right. So basically you stole my man of the match. So I will adjust mine and pick my second guy. I'll pick Iniesta. You know, Iniesta played only the second half. Obviously he just brings a calming storm to the team. Just, you know, possessing the ball as always, doing his magic dribbling. And, you know, just giving opportunities to the team for attacking. I will just add a couple things for Denis Suarez. He's definitely, getting better with his connection with Suarez and Messi, which is always key. And on that second goal, you can just see the passing was just perfect timing. And that just comes from playing a couple games before, learning the timing with Messi and Suarez. And that pass was just a beautiful pass. And Messi, of course, he just made the goalkeeper look so silly on that goal. It was just, how does he do that?
With just such a simple touch.
How does he do that?
I mean, it's not simple, but Messi makes it look simple.
I mean, like I said.
He just touches it. He just touches it with his foot.
His first touch is the best, what would we say, the best first touch I've ever seen. And in that goal, you can just see the Suarez gave him a pretty good paced pass. I mean, it was, you know, it wasn't the easiest pass to handle. And Messi just balleted around the goalkeeper and empty netter, you know?
Yeah, and he cradled it with his touch so that he took all the juice out of it. So Suarez gives him this pass, short pass, but clearly one with a lot of pace on it. But Messi's foot just says, no, let me take all the energy out of that and just point you this way. And later, goalkeeper, he just dances it in like he does.
So what are we going to do with Mr. Biting man himself, Luis Suarez? What's your feeling? Are you nervous? I'll tell you personally, I think he needs to, I don't know, he just needs to work on his offsides. That is just killing me so much because he's not getting to rhythm with the offsides. He thinks he's about to score and then he gets whistled for offside. And obviously he needs to play because he does so many other things on the field. But man, he just looks lost out there.
Yeah, he needs to work on his timing. But see, the funny thing is, I think a lot of managers and defensive lines have somehow like got him figured out. Like, I don't know, maybe he has some kind of a tell so that back lines know when to push up a little bit to catch him offside. Although at the same time, I'm not seeing a whole lot of that happening. It's mostly that he goes just a little bit too early. I mean, he would probably say that he's getting the pass too late, but I don't know, six of one, half a dozen of the other. Like, it's on him to stay on side. I think, and that's the one thing that I think he does need to work on, because that's something that he could, if he practiced, actually improve considerably. Whereas the other thing about him that bugs me is his first touch, which is not great. And of course, he's not a great dribbler. If you get him into open space, he can run on you, and he can get past a defender, but he can't get past two. And when you mark him really tight, and if you're clipping at his heels, you're probably going to get the ball off of him more often than not. So his first touch is the most annoying thing to me, but that's the kind of thing where, like, at his age, he's probably not going to get a much better first touch than he has right now. So we got to just kind of deal with that. Now, on the other hand, like you said, he does have to play, because he does offer so much. I mean, he's a killer finisher, and just his presence on the field changes the composition of the game, the way he can stretch out a defense just by his positioning, and he does get into really good positions. And he's a great player. I mean, he was involved with that other goal that was a really beautiful goal, a tiki-taka goal, right? Messi to Rakitic to Suarez back to Messi, goal. I mean, you know, that's your tiki-taka satisfaction there. But yeah, what are we going to do with Suarez? We're going to hope for the best and hope he doesn't bite anybody.
And also, we need to give him a new shirt too, because he tore it off today as well. I mean, this guy, you know, he's such a hothead, man. He's just... Man, you just never know if he's just going to fly off the deep end, you know? So,
yeah, he seems like he's having a hard time. And I wonder if that might be related to the recent, you know, violence that broke out in Uruguay, although apparently that happens a lot. He came out this week speaking out against violence in football. There was a particularly bad incident with players and spectators attacking referees, that sort of thing, in Uruguay, in Montevideo. And so I don't know, maybe that was on his mind, maybe something about the political situation. Even though he's not Spanish or Catalan, he doesn't exactly have a horse in the race, but maybe just the general tension around. He does seem oddly like a sensitive guy, but he's also a macho Uruguayan footballer. And so, like, that sensitivity comes out in these oddly violent ways sometimes. You know, gotta smash the patriarchy, but
you are a resident psychologist, and I'll be our resident body expert.
Yeah, you could be the body language expert. I'll be the psychologist and the social theorist.
There you go.
But yeah, I think hopefully if. I think that there is something going on in his head that might be slightly off the pitch that could be affecting how he is playing and how he's dealing with his performance. Because, yeah, the shirt tear, that was particularly odd and unnecessary. They were already up 3-0. It's,
yeah,
you know, your team is ahead. You can just say, all right, try again. And normally he does, because he's used to taking a lot of shots or trying, you know, taking a lot of chances and missing a good number. You know, he's used to that.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe something else is going on right now.
Well, we're
going
to see if Val Green can crack the safe with that and just get him to play with more confidence and get him some more goals. I think he will. I just think that Suarez is just trying to get used to his new position on the team with the new tactical strategy. I think it'll just take some time. Whereas, you know, Messi's like a learning computer, right? So you just tell him, I'm going to need you to do this. And he like adapts in like 2 seconds because he's a genius, right? Whereas Suarez may take some, you know, a little bit longer. You know, when Suarez first joined Barcelona, it took him a while, you know, maybe like 2 months or so to really get the 4-3-3 of his positioning and all that. So maybe it's just another adaptation to that as well.
Yeah. And he's going through his growing pains dealing with that. Whereas, yeah, Messi is like, he's like Neo, you know, you just plug him in and suddenly he knows Kung Fu, right?
Yeah. Whoa, Kung Fu.
Bro. All right. So let's talk about some club news. And you know what's funny? This was going to be our top story this week because it seemed to be like the biggest story affecting the club. And then Sunday happened. But let's get into this. So over the week, Agustí Benedito threw in the towel on the no confidence effort. He needed 16,570 signatures. He only had 12,500 by the 27th of September, and then Of course, he and the club had disagreed on the deadline. They said the 27th. He said October 2nd. But of course, the club holds all the power in that situation. He says he could have gotten all the signatures he needed if he had more time. And I think he probably could have. But then ultimately, by the 27th, he still only had those 12,500. He said he was expecting more in the mail, and then he probably could have gathered more at the Las Palmas game. But again, that's assuming that Sunday didn't go down the way it did go down. He's not going to mount another campaign. And apparently he's had all the forms destroyed by a notary. Apparently he said that countless people have demanded that I do not give their information to the club in the case we did not hit the target because they do not trust the board. Which I think might have been a little bit of extra politicking on Benedito's part, but
yeah, he just needed more time. He just needed like what, 6 more months or something? I mean,
another year.
Yeah, exactly. If he only had more time, you know. Yeah, especially imagine if he banked everything to get those last signatures on today's game, and then goes there, and then obviously what happened today? Oh my gosh! Like, yeah, unfortunately, he didn't get the signatures. You know, it's funny because when we started recording this podcast together, you know, this was obviously one of the topics that we were talking about. And I really strongly believed that he was going to achieve the goal. But then like reading and talking to people here, I realized that a lot of the Socis are older and they're not really into like this type of movement and shaking the boat. So once I started reading and listening and understanding more of the Socis in Barcelona and Catalonia and stuff that actually have the power to do the vote and all that stuff, I was starting to lean that he wasn't going to get enough signatures. And then obviously in the last episodes we were talking that it just didn't look good with the numbers. Yeah, unfortunately he wasn't able to do that. Hopefully the board listened. Maybe they got a little scared. I don't know, but I still, man, I wish he would have got enough signatures to bring it to a vote, because then I think the board would have had to pay attention, because then the board would have had to, you know, bring Bartomeu up to counter whoever the other people were going to bring up. And so, unfortunately, it didn't happen. And yeah, so we got to keep this board now until what, 2 more years?
2021,
or so?
4 more years.
Yippee!
Well, okay, so here's a question, and this actually comes back to the political events in Catalonia on Sunday, but it also ties in with this no confidence effort and the state of the board. So we did get a message on Instagram from our buddy Don Marlin 503. He says, the videos coming from Barcelona are heartbreaking. I understand the decision to not allow fans in the stadium to avoid rioting, but historically, the club has given Catalunya a voice. Do you think there's going to be a shakeup in the board because of this? And he says, now more than ever, hashtag más que un club. He went with Spanish on that, but that's cool. Whatever language you speak, more than a club, más que un club, it's all good. I mean, already there's been a shakeup in the board because one vice president has already resigned. And I think I heard a report that another vice president has also resigned just because they decided to play this match. So when you combine that with whatever message might be sent by the 12,500 some signatures that Benedito did get, is Bartomeu now and the board going to, I don't know, shift things around, maybe make a different approach? Try something different. What do you think?
Well, I think actually it might help Bartomeu, because now he could put another puppet in there for him. You know, that could be another situation. So shaking it up, yeah. You know, this guy, some people on the board were, you know, really adamant of not playing this match. They were so adamant that they resigned their position. That's a really strong position to hold. But now I also think that Bartomeu can just put more puppets and he doesn't have any controversy on his board going forward. So it could go worse. I don't know if that's possible. It could go worse. He could have more yes men on his board supporting him day in and day out.
Yeah, I mean, basically, I don't think anything's going to change, at least not in the opposite direction of the way that things have been going under him.
Brian, how many people are on the board?
I don't know. How many? Do you know how many people are on the board? Do you have Google?
I do have a Google machine, so let me take a look here. There is 20 people, and yeah, so 20 people on the board. So if more people resign, let's say 5 or so We don't know if Bartomeu could bring in more puppets or what's going to happen. So that'll be an interesting sidebar to follow in the coming week.
Well, when a new president comes in, don't they bring in their own board, or can they hold on to people who are already there? I mean, I thought it worked kind of like a presidential administration. You can make new appointments.
Yeah, it could be. That seems like the most reasonable, but I'm just not sure. Obviously, we'll find out either today or tomorrow when the news comes out of more people resigning, and we'll see what the next process is.
Yeah, but I think there's a good chance that essentially either nothing will change, which at this point might be the best possible scenario, because otherwise I think the things that we've been complaining about, the things that the people who are complaining about, there's just going to get worse. There's just going to be more of it. But I was also mentioning the strategic plan, which if you haven't looked at it, check out FC Barcelona's website. They do have the strategic plan available. It's about a 2 or 3 page sort of a spreadsheet presentation style thing. It's not a particularly verbose document. You can check it out. And under their sporting goals, their only sporting goal is to win one of the 3 competitions per year. So as long as the team wins La Liga or the Copa del Rey or the Champions League, any one of those, the club is happy or the directors are happy and they're meeting their goals. So at least if you win more, great. But if you only have to win the one in order for the board to be able to say, well, we've done our job, we've met our goals, we've met our objectives. And, of course, trebles don't just roll along every year. It's a very difficult thing to do. And the fact that Barcelona has won as many trebles as they have in the last 10 years is just testament to how great they've been over the last 10 years. But I think that it would be nice to maybe set your goals a little higher.
Exactly. I have it up right now. I'm taking a look at it. So yeah, you're right. So 1 of every 3 titles each season. This is pretty interesting. I never knew they had this. It's actually pretty cool because at least you can't fault them, right? Because they're like, yeah, we won Copa del Rey this year, and it's like it's in line with their strategy. I think it's a really cool idea. Like you said, though, I would hope to aim a little bit higher. But what did we say last episode was to aim low and overperform, like that type of thing. So yeah,
Lower expectations so that you can exceed them.
I think
more
it
easily.
Says here actually to win the Gamper Trophy is okay. So. In the history. Is that what it's called?
just bring in some patsy team.
Yeah.
Not that Chapo Suense this year were a patsy team. It was actually, I think, a lovely gesture that they made inviting Chapo Suense
to play the
Gamper.
I was just kidding.
I mean, when was the last time Barca didn't win the Gamper?
Yeah, exactly.
Probably a while ago.
No, it's actually really interesting because it lays out everything on an amazing PDF format, easy for downloadable access. And yeah, so it lays out the whole strategy. So you can't really fault them going forward. They can always go back to this and say, look, we hit all our goals. And so we're doing a great job.
We're in line. We are meeting the goals we set for ourselves. And, in the end, isn't that all you really do? You're really only competing with yourself.
Exactly. Exactly. You're just competing with yourself.
All right, so I think now let's talk about the Valverde Val Green issue. It has become an issue this week because we got an email from a listener, and I have to say this listener is very complimentary, and I'm pretty sure that he left a positive review for us in the iTunes store, which we're very thankful for, and we're even thankful for this email. We might ultimately disagree a little bit, but that's okay. It's fine. We really appreciate him reaching out. So this came from Victor, just right through the email box. And he says, gentlemen, thank you for the time and energy with your pod. As an English-only speaking culé, I appreciate what you're doing. I do need some help with something. You have to help me understand this Val Green thing. I feel like a manager with an 8-0 record and now 9-0 shouldn't have his name butchered. Yes, it's a literal translation, but he isn't Andre Gomeshit, and I do like that a lot, or someone who has frustrated the fans. I'm sharing because hearing Val Green repeated feels disrespectful and simply grinds on my ears. Please consider ceasing. So thank you again, Victor, for sending that email in. I think that you do make a valid point to a degree, but we do have a response, and I want to make sure to note that we want to respond in dissent, but kindly and compassionately.
So our, you know, I speak Spanish, and obviously I know verde means green, yeah? But with the show, we want to, our goal is to create a community of culés and make it lighthearted. And so, for example, we had Val Green as a hashtag to try to get more awareness of our podcast and so forth. But we also want to make it lighthearted and fun as well. And doing the Val Green thing is something that I came up with because I love nicknames. I love giving nicknames. Just like last week in our Twitter poll, we finally decided we're going to call Paulinho what, Brian? What are we going to call him?
He's going to be called Paulie.
Yeah, so Paulie Juan. So from now on, we're going to be calling him Paulie. And it just kind of just puts a nice little spin. I give all my friends nicknames because I just think it's fun, especially from different scenarios. And I just think that, you know, I disrespectfully disagree. I like these funny little nicknames. So Val Green will live forever.
Yeah, and also I think that we have been very clear that we really like Val Green as the manager. We appreciate him very much, and he keeps delivering and keeps impressing us. I mean, those many years that he spent managing in Bilbao, and I forget where he was managing before that, but he's very experienced, and we're very appreciative to have him, and we have the utmost respect for him. That being said, also in light of the sort of political events happening in Catalonia right now, I think that trying to create a sense of closeness with these players and managers, a kind of familiarity is what it really boils down to. It's about treating him like not like a buddy or a pal, because we don't actually know him or anything, but we want to feel like we do because we want to feel closer to the club and closer to him. And doing that, giving him this nickname, it's a very simple one, is one way for us to do that, to feel like we're somehow closer to him and more connected with him in a kind of familiar way. And so it's actually out of respect that we call him this in this particular way. But also I think it's, you know, he's a football manager. He's a very good football manager. But at the end of the day, he's also just a football manager, and he's someone who, you know, we respect, but we also, I think, can kind of joke around with. I mean, that's one of the other nice things about sport is that, you know, there's sport and then there's life, and sport is ultimately going to be a more lighthearted thing than life.
Can I also applaud Victor on that nickname? Because that nickname for Andre Gomez is amazing. I think we should almost implement it into our nickname forum of culés, you know? But
I'm trying to be nicer. I'm trying to be nicer to Gomes. You know, he came in as a sub against Las Palmas, and for the minutes that he played, I think he actually did a fairly decent job. You know, he's not seeing many minutes now under Val Green, and I'm trying to just be nicer to him. So I do love it, but I want to only reserve it for when he has a particularly bad game.
You're too positive.
I just want to be kind.
Yeah, I mean, of course, right? Because he's on our team and so forth, and if he plays well, we do better. So I totally understand that, but I just don't like his game at all, as I've mentioned in earlier episodes. But sure. Yeah, so thanks, Victor, for the email. Hopefully Val Green doesn't grind on your ears too much in the future.
Yeah, and again, thank you for listening, and thank you for reviews, which brings me very nicely into talking about this this giveaway thing that we are still doing. So for all of you iTunes users, remember to rate and review Barca Talk in iTunes or Apple Podcasts, and you could win a subscription to FCB's premium video. So that's good for 12 months, and that's going to take you comfortably into the start of the 2018 season. Your iTunes review is your entry into this giveaway, so do that. So more than likely, you're listening on your iPhone right now, and if you have the new iOS 11, you can actually just scroll down past the episodes and rate and review it right now. It's not as cumbersome or weird to find as it used to be. So we kicked this off last week, and we've had about 10 reviews come in which is great. But if I'm totally honest, I want more. I want so many more. I want 100 reviews, ideally, because those sorts of things are what help the show grow. And eventually, maybe Gabriel and I can start getting some scratch into the game here.
Help us get paid.
Yeah, help us help you. And you don't have to give a super wordy review. In fact, one of my favorite reviews this show has ever received just said, "You is good," with 5 stars. And that's all you need to do. And we'll give you a year of Barsa's premium video for free. So if you could do that, awesome. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, and that premium video is pretty amazing. Just for example, this past week I was trying to find the sporting game from Wednesday, and it was really difficult to find a replay of that. So I really wished I would have left a review so that I could get this premium video so I can get those games to rewatch them. Because sometimes when you're watching the game, you don't get the full, I don't know, you maybe sometimes, like for me especially, I'm just kind of watching the game, the score, you know, talking with friends. Sometimes I need to repeat it to watch again, especially when we're doing the podcast review and rate the players and so forth. But that premium video subscription is money.
Yeah, and especially with the Champions League matches, those are available 2 hours after the match is over on the FCB premium video. The La Liga matches are available, I think, 2 days after. So you have to wait a little bit longer to watch those, but the Champions League matches are available just 2 hours after they're done, which is a very cool feature, and they worked out a good deal with the UEFA or whatever to be able to do that.
And also you get all the best matches in Barca's history in the last 6 years. So for example, like the AC Milan comeback victory in the Champions League like 5 years ago, you can watch that in full. The PSG game, for example. So, and also it's an HD quality and you can pick your language. It's pretty amazing. So rate and review us on iTunes and get your name in the hat for this prize.
So let's take a quick look at La Liga. Now, we're recording this prior to Real Madrid's match, but going into this weekend, they are in sixth place with only 11 points, and they're playing Espanyol. Of course, our assumption is that they're going to win that match, and so they're going to wind up with 14 points, which still keeps Barcelona 7 points ahead. Now, Sevilla, also, again, looking pretty strong for being Sevilla. They defeated Malaga 2-0, and they're staying in second place. Again, maybe the outcome of some other matches might influence that, but they have 16 points. Valencia is there with 15, and Atletico Madrid drew against Leganés, so they're stuck at 15 points. So best-case scenario, Real Madrid will rise in the table to maybe fifth place. And of course, we know that they're going to start winning more. They're going to rise in the table. Other teams are going to drop points. The only thing that we're concerned about, I guess, is whether Barcelona drops points. But amazingly, they have not dropped any points yet. They're still unbeaten.
Yeah, so I don't know if this is really legal review, but did you see the Real Madrid game, the Champions League? They just came out full force against Borussia. They beat them. So again, it just goes back to what we were talking about last week, that Real Madrid's going to put all their focus on Champions League first, then La Liga second. They looked super strong against Borussia, who is a great team, a good team. Unfortunately, our wonder kid did not play. He only played the last 10 minutes and didn't really do anything. He didn't have an impact. Atletico, a really bad week, really bad week. They lost to Chelsea. Chelsea just outclassed them completely. And also they're playing in the new Wanda Stadium. So you would think that Atletico would have fared better. They weathered the storm for the first 20 minutes of the game. They got the lead, but Morata just had a great game, and Chelsea looks to be a really good team for the Champions League this year. So Atletico with this tie, you know, again, we talk about this. Atletico, man, they're such a tough team to follow because they'll have a great performance the week before and then they'll have a bad week like this. But they're our next opponent after the international break. So that's going to be a tough match, and it's at the Wanda. Valencia, I'm not too worried about them. But Sevilla, they're going to be there for a while because also I think they're only playing the Europa League, or maybe they're in the Champions. And so they're going to be, they're in the Champions. But they're a strong team. Again, they have a good team, especially with your boy Navas playing. I think that gives them another boost up there in the front that they haven't had before. They also have Nolito, great player. So they're going to be up there in the top four. But like we said, it's always going to be between most likely Real Madrid and Barca for the league this year.
Yeah, it's just teams like Sevilla are the ones that we want to be careful about as far as dropping points against them.
Have you seen any of the matches of Sevilla by chance? I know you've been busy and stuff, but have you seen them this year?
No, not yet. I would love to have some free time to watch more games.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to see them yet, just from reading and listening to some other podcasts about La Liga. The Sevilla looks to be pretty strong this year. So we'll see how they fare against Barca. They play Barca in November, and it's going to be at the Camp Nou. So that'll be good for us to get them at home first.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's get into the Champions League and talk about the match that happened on Tuesday in Lisbon against Sporting CP. So Barcelona won, so that's good. It was a 1-0 win. Officially with an own goal off of Coates. And I mean, where do you start with this game? Honestly, the most notable thing that probably happened was a fan running onto the pitch to meet Messi and kissing his boot.
Could that kid be the man of the match? Because this game was super bad, super boring. Let me tell you my viewing experience with this. I went to my friend's house who I hadn't seen in a while. There were so many good games that night. It was PSG against Bayern, Chelsea against Atleti. You know, I love football, and I was feeling confident that they were going to beat Sporting. So we put the Champions League simulcast where they shows all the games, basically. So I didn't get to watch this game completely, but I was following on Twitter and so forth. But man, I watched the replay too because I wanted to see for myself. But man, we had some opportunities. We had our strongest team against Semedo, looked great. Our defense looked better. But also, you know, it's just this is Sporting's Super Bowl. You know, at home they're gonna they're a good team, they're a professional team, and they came to play, and it was a tough place to play. It's a tough place to play. They really gave it to us, you know. But like you said, we got the victory, and we just keep moving on. Where did you watch the match?
I watched it at home on my computer, and I actually used the FCB premium video feature because I don't own a TV, and I'm not saying that in like a hipster way. I have been broke for many years, and I have not needed a TV, so I just don't have one. So all the entertainment I watch on my computer, which of course is getting easier and easier now. So I don't necessarily need one, although I think we're going to buy one in the near future. But so I was watching it on my computer at home the day after the match because I was really busy when they were playing it with school stuff and that sort of thing. But so I had some time on another day to watch it. And yeah, Sporting were very tough. And I think probably the most telling thing, if you're into reading into statistics, just look at the 6 yellow cards that Sporting earned. I mean, they were playing them very physically and very tough and fouling them a lot, and I think some of those yellow cards were a little soft. The referee, I think, was giving them a little bit too easily on maybe one or two occasions, but still, they were just playing them really tough and getting really physical with them, and Barca were not responding in kind. They weren't really getting past their defense, and you got to hand it to Mathieu, honestly. Mathieu, remember Mathieu, the defender who was unceremoniously released from Barca over the summer? He had a really good game for Sporting. Like, he stepped up and he stopped a number of chances that could have made the score much worse in Barca's favor, or much better in Barca's favor. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a good center back. I just don't think he's the center back for like Barca playing the tiki-taka out of the back style. I think that's his weakest part, but he's a strong defender. And I'm pretty positive that he gave them the scouting report to Sporting of what they could do to rile them up or to frustrate Barca. And that's how I would counter. I would be as physical as possible to Barca, especially now without Xavi. They could be pushed around a bunch on the field. But again, Barcelona had opportunities to score. They made the most of that one opportunity with the own goal. Obviously, it was chaos in the box, again, from another set play. You know, again, from that distance, it's almost like another corner kick, but from a different angle. And in years past, they would have done a short pass, probably, and they didn't. And that chaos created that goal. So, yeah, so, you know, again, we're still at the top of the table. great. You know, another victory. Again, it wasn't the prettiest game. I had a hard time rewatching it. I would have rather, I don't know, written something, an essay or something, because it was pretty hard to watch. But but again, the most important thing, they got the points.
Yeah. All right. So let's do man of the match. Let's start with you.
All right. So my man of the match is Umtiti. Umtiti's is rapidly becoming one of my favorite players on the team. I just love the way he's a beast. He's just a beast on defense. And he's so confident on the ball. I didn't think he was going to be this good playing with PK, having the passing ability that he does, but also just being physical. He's just going to get better and better. And I have here in my notes, is he becoming the new Puyol? Because he's kind of like, he kind of has like this, like, leadership quality of not being the loudest, but leads by example and being really good. Like Puyol, you know, like Puyol wasn't the loudest guy. He just kind of led by example. And first of all, I miss Puyol. That guy was so badass. But anyway.
Oh, yeah.
But Umtiti is growing into that type of role, you know, like imagine Umtiti with long hair. I see it. Puyol right there, you know?
Yeah. And about another foot in height.
Exactly. And, you know, he's like Puyol 2.0, like faster, stronger, taller, you know, like this type of thing.
So the bionic Puyol.
Exactly. Umtiti had a really strong match, so he was my man of the match. Who was yours?
My boy, Sergi. Well, okay. Oh, here's...
Did you send him some roses or what?
I don't know if he got them. I haven't seen them on Instagram yet, but yeah, I sent them. Sent him a dozen roses. Thanks for running so hard on the park. No, okay. So yeah, Sergi was my man of the match, and here's why. He was all over the place, right? But not in some uncontrolled, chaotic way. He was actually very much in control. He was reading the game, running hard, and he was linking up with Semedo, Messi, Rakitic. And then there was that super key pass that he made to Suarez for a shot that was ultimately blocked, you know, but had Suarez put that away, it would have been an assist. He had a lot of hustle. Now, let me get into this. All right, so he made one key pass in the 27th minute. Yeah. So on that play, that key pass to Suarez, he's actually out of position because he was mostly playing on the right, but this play saw him sort of drift from right over to left. All right, so now, here's how it goes down. PK with the ball around the halfway line. Sergi starts a run on the outside right, but he's getting marked pretty closely. Pass doesn't come. So he cuts in and back up a few yards. He leaves the defender behind, and now the pass comes from PK. So Sergi dishes it off to Busquets. He heads downfield and even more to the left. In the meantime, Busquets has given the ball to Iniesta, who now plays it to Sergi again, with Suarez making a run just ahead of him. Two defenders are following Suarez, so Sergi now has a little bit of room to run. And then he sends it to Suarez at, I believe, the perfect moment, a great pass. Suarez gets the shot off, but it's blocked. And the play didn't stop there, but it ended with Messi's headed shot being held by the goalkeeper. But, I mean, just the way that Sergio Ribeiro moved through that play, and he was so instrumental in all parts of it, he didn't do anything wrong. There wasn't a goal. A goal didn't come from it, but it certainly wasn't for lack of him, and he was involved in every phase of that.
Wow.
Did I just blow your mind?
You're mind blown. Like, wow, that is quite the description of the play. I feel like I was right there on the touchline. Yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, we can't pick Messi anymore. That's our thing. So
that's our rule, yeah.
Yeah, it's our rule. So, you know, like you have the stats here, you know, Sergio Roberto definitely had a strong game. I wouldn't be mad at him for getting that. I just think Umtiti was just especially in this type of game that was more of a street fight, he held the back line well, and we didn't allow a goal again. So keeping the shutout streak alive on that for Champions League. So, yeah, I mean, you know, with this team, again, our boy Semedo had another great game, especially on the goal. You know, the player had to hold him because he was running past him. But, man, when we have that lineup, you know, it would just – I don't know. Sergio Roberto, I feel confident for him as a winger better than Alex Vidal, right, or De La Feu right now. So yeah. I think going forward, I think that's a good lineup to have. It's our defense is strong, and we still have really good flexibility in attacking. So –
Yeah, moving forward, I think whenever Semedo gets the start, then we'd be more likely to see Sergi on like right wing rather than Deulofeu, at least while Dembele is out. You know, once Dembele is back from injury, we'll see what happens. We'll see how the rotation starts working. But if Semedo gets a start on right back, I don't see how you wouldn't want to play Sergi Roberto somewhere on the pitch.
Exactly. And, you know, Semedo, PK, Umtiti, and Alba, it's a really formidable back line now with attacking options, speed, and of course, you know, physicality, which we didn't really have before. You know, just adding Semedo just gives us so much physicality that we were lacking for like the last, you know, for a long time. I mean, Dani Alves was a great right back, but he was not.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. That's true. And yeah, I totally agree. And also, you know, it's occurring to me, I guess we have an unofficial rule. Maybe we should make it a spoken rule that apparently we can't pick the same player as man of the match. Because, of course, our goal here is to not so much pick man of the match. We're not in the business of just like making power rankings. I don't think that's really what our goal here is. Our goal here is to highlight players and their contribution. And of course, we have to we always recognize Messi's contribution because it's always a big contribution, even if it's just how he draws players to him because they have to cover him so hard. But we just don't pick Messi as our quote-unquote man of the match, and we just want to feature other players. But yeah, I guess we also are operating under the unspoken rule that whoever I choose, you should choose someone else, and because I took Dennis.
Well, the thing is, I know you're always going to pick Sergio Roberto, so I can just pick anyone else on the team. So that's the other thing.
Not every time. Not every time.
I mean, the only thing that Sergio Roberto needs to do is like walk on water and turn water into wine, you know, and then he's just the best guy for you.
I mean, honestly, all he needs to do is walk on the pitch and I'm happy. But so moving forward, this coming week, there's going to be an international break, no club matches. So what we're going to do next week is we're going to check in with the international play. And I do have a topic that I want to bring up with you about that. But well, since we have the time and no club matches to talk about, we're also going to maybe check in with the B squad, the women's team, and the youth. We're going to talk about the youths.
The two youths.
But also, I figured this would be an interesting time to talk about Iniesta next week, because Valverde has been using Iniesta a lot more than Luis Enrique did, and it's really paying off. Iniesta has come alive again in a way that we haven't seen in a few years. And of course, we were always thinking that it was because of maybe his age, he was in decline. But turns out that's maybe not the case. And we're going to look at the details of his return to the core starting 11 under Valverde next week. Now, as far as international break is concerned, Argentina seems to be, I think, the main topic for me, because currently they're in fifth place in the South American competition. If they stay there, they'd have to go to a playoff to actually compete in Russia next year. They're playing Peru and Ecuador in this next break, and Peru could be decisive because they're level on points with Argentina, but ahead in the group, having won 7 matches to Argentina's 6. And their last game against each other in the qualifiers ended in a 2-2 draw. So that match alone could make or break Argentina's chances. But Ecuador won't be an easy game either. In fact, Argentina lost to Ecuador in their last game back in 2015. So they're playing Ecuador. That could be a tough one. The bright side is that Sampaoli, who did a great job with the Chilean team, has been managing Argentina starting just this year. And if he can get the squad together, I think he can get them into the finals in Russia without having to go to a playoff. But the big thing is, imagine the 2018 World Cup without Argentina and without Messi, because this is most likely going to be his last World Cup.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be most likely his last World Cup, but I think they'll qualify. I think that they'll be able to pull it together. I just don't understand with Argentina. They have so much talent on that team. They should be able just to copy the 4-3-3 of Barca and just have Messi do his role and the other players fill in as well. Have Aguero, have Di Maria, like have all these really great Argentina players just fill those roles. But I think they're just trying too much, right? And people are definitely panicking. It's definitely a situation because they do not want to play against Australia or New Zealand or whoever they have to play for the playoff, because that's just another 2 games you have to play and fly across the world to do that. I'm more worried about the U.S. That's another one. You know,
are they in danger of not making it?
Oh my gosh, they are. They are. They have two tough games coming up, and you know, Jurgen Klinsmann and all the promises he promised us. You know, he just, man, the U.S. soccer program is in shambles. If they don't pull this out, man, they may not qualify for the World Cup, and that, for me, that's scarier because they should always qualify coming out of the CONCACAF. But yeah, Argentina as well. Do you know Brazil or
Brazil has tidily just they've clinched it. Brazil has clinched the top of the South American qualifiers, so they're not in danger at all. And I forget who's in the other spots, but I think Uruguay is in second. But also, a quick correction. Klinsmann is no longer managing the U.S. men's national team. It's Bruce Army now, isn't it?
No, it's not. Well, it's Bruce Arenas. But
Bruce
Arenas.
Yeah, God damn it. Why don't – a couple weeks ago, I called him Dick Army for some reason. And someone corrected me saying Bruce Arena. And then so I took the Bruce, but I kept the Army.
Yeah. I like it. I like it, though. Bruce Army.
I just want to call him Dick Army just because.
There you go, Dick Army. No, yeah, Jurgen is no longer there, thank God. But we have recycled Bruce Arena. We have pulled him out of the trash to lead the U.S. soccer team to World Cup qualifying. We'll see what he does. And yeah, I'm worried about that more than Argentina. I mean, obviously, I would love to see Messi in the World Cup, but at the same time, me being American, I want U.S. soccer to be in the World Cup at least. So yeah.
Okay, so we're going to check in with all of that, and as well as all the other things that I just mentioned, next week on Barca Talk. All right. Thank you again, everyone, for listening. Be a part of the show. Give us your comments, your questions, topics you'd like us to discuss. Visit us at barsatalk.net, and you can call the phone line to hear your own voice on the show if you want. The number is 716-795-2853. And don't forget to rate and review on iTunes for a chance to get a one-year subscription to FC Barcelona's premium video on us. You'll hear from us again next week. Until then, I'm Brian Henderson.
I'm Gabriel Quiroga.
This is Barca Talk. Visca Barca.
Visca Barca.